afternoon, good evening, Power Hour Nation, wherever you may be, from sea to shining sea, and from the shores to the shores beyond on this wonderful, wonderful Eden existence that we reside in, Earth, whatever format it may be, round or flat, square or some sort of hyperbole. We are here, we love it, we breathe it, we see it, we sense it, and we know who made it. And it wasn't Al Gore. He's just someone who's trying to take it apart. You hear that sound? You hear that sound, son? That's freedom. I love to wake up to the sound of freedom in the morning because it sounds like victory. And there's no greater victory than cavalry and no greater cavalry than the Power Hour cavalry. We're forming posse and we're going to go right deep into the belly of the beast today. Where I am in the Eastern time zone, of course, it's noon, and I've been a big aficionado of the old Westerns, and probably one of the greatest ever was High Noon with Gary Cooper. And here at my time zone, it is High Noon. The train's coming in, and it's bringing all sorts of evil, and for some strange reason, I'm the marshal today. Unfortunately, Jack Mullen had some business affairs to deal with, so he can't join us today. But we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to play a recording of Boris Johnson at the United Nations, and he's doing something very, very rare, something I've never heard a politician really do, unless he was probably tied up and tortured or something, but he's just going to speak frankly and tell the truth about a very, very ominous affair, and that's artificial intelligence. This whole climate emergency stuff is nothing but a red herring. If anyone knows anything about strategy, tactics, and sports, you know you have to have a diversion or a feint to get across the goal line sometimes, and that's what makes it necessary. You want everybody running in one direction, well, you come around in another direction and go across the line and score the touchdown or get the pass or score with the puck or whatever game you play. That's called a feint. And in the military, that's one of the best things you can do to get your enemy to go one way, and you do something else. That reminds me of probably one of my favorite generals, if not my favorite general of all time, General George Patton. You know, he knew that. He knew that very, very well. And when finally, they gave him orders to move once. He thought it was a red herring order, that they were taking him out of position. And his intelligence chief advised him the same thing. So he prepared his army to do a complete 180 and go back where they were. It was very perilous times, probably one of the most important battles the United States military fought ever, definitely one of the most important ones in World War II and in Europe, the Battle of the Bulge. So when he finally got those orders to advance in another direction, God bless him, that he realized there were probably traitors and infiltrators in the system somewhere, may have been doing the Germans a favor. And he doubled back because something happened. The Germans started the Battle of the Bulge. So within 24 hours to 48 hours, he was coming back at full speed to knock them good and hard. You have to admire someone who knows strategy, but also the strategy of the infiltrator, the Benedict Arnolds, the people who say hello to you every day, eat with you, shake your hand, pander you in many, many ways, but are actually working for a dark side, trying to seduce you into things that aren't in the best interests of your country, the world, or anything else. Back in those days, there was another prime minister named Winston Churchill. There's a short snippet of a speech I'll say about him, and then you can listen to Boris Johnson on how he surrenders not just England, but probably the whole world to artificial intelligence. So Churchill said, even though large tracts of Europe and many old and famous states have fallen or may fall into the grip of the Gestapo and all the odious apparatus of Nazi rule, we shall not flag or fail. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. And if which I do not for a moment believe, this island or a large part of it were subjugated and starving, then our empire beyond the seas, armed and guarded by the British fleet, would carry on the struggle until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of the old. Two very important factors there. Never giving up, being armed, and in countries like mine, because we were the other side of the empire, and in God's good time, recognizing the supreme power of our Father in heaven. And then we have Boris Johnson coming along, who I admire for telling Europe to go to blazes and getting England out of that basically one world government complex state called Europe, which is anathema to any freedom or any history of the British Empire and its development over the years. Surrendering completely and totally and telling us exactly what AI is. I've come to you in the past many, many times to talk about this. I'm just a humble man from Canada. But if he was marking my scorecard or my report card on the subject, I got 110%, maybe I got 150%. It's just, I didn't want to look any further. It's just that difficult to believe or to understand. But it is probably the one and only time we'll hear the truth about what is really at stake. Can we play the clip now?
I invite him to address the General Assembly.
Thank you. Mr. President, Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, faithful late-night audience, It's customary for the British Prime Minister to come to this United Nations and pledge to advance our values and defend our rules, the rules of a peaceful world, protecting freedom of navigation in the Gulf, to persevering in the vital task of achieving a two-state solution in the conflict in the Middle East. And of course I'm proud to do all these things, but no one can ignore a gathering force that is reshaping the future of every member of this assembly. There has been nothing like it in history. When I think of the great scientific revolutions of the past, print, the steam engine, aviation, the atomic age, I think of new tools that we acquired, but over which we, the human race, had the advantage, which we controlled. And that is not necessarily the case in the digital age. You may keep your secrets from your friends, from your parents, your children, your doctor, even your personal trainer. But it takes real effort to conceal your thoughts from Google. And if that is true today, in future, there may be nowhere to hide. Smart cities will pullulate with sensors, all joined together by the Internet of Things. Bollards communing invisibly with lampposts. So there is always a parking space for your electric car, so that no bin goes unemptied, no street unswept, and the urban environment is as antiseptic as a Zurich pharmacy. But this technology could also be used to keep every citizen under round-the-clock surveillance. A future Alexa will pretend to take orders, but this Alexa will be watching you, clucking her tongue and stamping her foot. In future, voice connectivity will be in every room and almost every object. Your mattress will monitor your nightmares. Your fridge will beep for more cheese. Your front door will sweep wide the moment you approach like some silent butler. Your smart meter will go hustling of its own accord for the cheapest electricity, and every one of them minutely transcribing your every habit in tiny electronic shorthand, stored not in their chips or in their innards, nowhere you can find it, but in some great cloud of data that lowers ever more oppressively over the human race. A giant dark thundercloud waiting to burst, and we have no control over how or when the precipitation will take place. And every day that we tap on our phones or work on our iPads, as I see some of you are doing now, we not only leave our indelible spoor in the ether, but we are ourselves becoming a resource, click by click, tap by tap, just as the Carboniferous period created the indescribable wealth, leaf by decaying leaf, of hydrocarbons. Data is the crude oil of the modern economy, and we're now in an environment where we don't know who should own these new oil fields. We don't know who should have the rights or the title to these gushers of cash, and we don't know who decides how to use that data. And can these algorithms be trusted with our lives and hopes? Should the machines, and only the machines, decide whether or not we are eligible for a mortgage or insurance, or what surgery or medicines we should receive? Are we doomed to a cold and heartless future in which computer says yes or computer says no, with the grim finality of an emperor in the arena? How do you plead with an algorithm? How do you get it to see extenuating circumstances? And how do we know that the machines have not been insidiously programmed to fool us or even to cheat us? We're already using all kinds of messaging services that offer instant communication at minimal cost. And these same programs, platforms, could also be designed for real-time censorship of every conversation, with offending words automatically deleted. Indeed, in some countries, this happens today. Digital authoritarianism is not, alas, the stuff of dystopian fantasy, but of an emerging reality. And the reason I'm giving this speech today with this slightly gloomy proem is that the UK is one of the world's tech leaders, and I believe governments have been simply caught unawares by the unintended consequences of the internet, a scientific breakthrough far more reaching in its everyday psychological impact than any other invention since Gutenberg. And when you consider how long it took for books to come into widespread circulation, the arrival of the internet is far bigger than print. It's bigger than the atomic age, but it's like nuclear power in that it's capable of both good and harm. And of course, it's not alone. As new technologies seem to race towards us from the far horizon, we strain our eyes as they come to make out whether they are for good or bad, friends or foes. AI. What will it mean? Helpful robots washing and caring for an aging population, or pink-eyed Terminator sent back from the future to cull the human race? What will synthetic biology stand for? Restoring our livers and our eyes with miracle regeneration of the tissues, like some fantastic hangover cure? Or will it bring terrifying limbless chickens to our tables? Will nanotechnology help us to beat disease, or will it leave tiny robots to replicate in the crevices of our souls? It is a trope as old as literature that any scientific advance is punished by the gods. When Prometheus brought fire to mankind in a tube of fennel, as you may remember, with his brother Epimetheus, Zeus punished him by chaining him to a Tartarian crag while his liver was pecked out. I talked about a hangover cure. His liver was pecked out by an eagle, and every time his liver regrew, the eagle came back and pecked it again. And this went on forever. A bit like the experience of Brexit in the UK. If some of our parliamentarians had their way. In fact, it was a standard poetic practice to curse the protos heurotes, the person responsible for any scientific or technical breakthrough. If only they had never invented the ship, then Jason would never have sailed to Colchis and all sorts of disasters would never have happened. And it's a deep human instinct to be wary of any kind of technical progress. In 1829, they thought that the human frame would not withstand the speeds attained by Stevenson's rocket. And there are today people who are still actually anti-science. A whole movement called the anti-vaxxers, who refuse to acknowledge the evidence that vaccinations have eradicated smallpox and who by their prejudices are actually endangering the very children they want to protect. And I totally reject this anti-scientific pessimism. I'm profoundly optimistic about the ability of new technology to serve as a liberator and to remake the world wondrously and benignly. Indeed, in countless respects, technology is already doing just that. Nanotechnology, I mentioned earlier, revolutionizing medicine by designing robots a fraction of the size of a red blood cell, capable of swimming through our bodies, dispensing medicine and attacking malignant cells like some Star Wars armada. Neural interface technology is producing a new generation of cochlear implants, allowing the gift of hearing to people who would otherwise not be able to hear the voices of their own children. A London technology company has worked out how to help the blind to navigate more freely with nothing more than an app on their smartphones. New technologies produced in Britain, helping the deaf to hear and the blind to see. And we used to think that printing was something that you did to run off a boarding card. Now a British company has used 3D printing to make an engine capable of blasting a rocket in space. In African countries, millions of people without bank accounts can now transfer money using a simple app. They can buy solar energy and leap in one transaction from no electricity to green power. And new advances are making renewable energy ever cheaper, aiding our common struggle against climate change. Our understanding of the natural world is being transformed by genome sequencing, the discovery of the very essence of life itself, the secret genetic code that animates the spirit of every living being and allows medical breakthroughs the like of which we have never known, treatments tailored to the precise genetic makeup of the individual. So far, we have discovered the secrets of less than 0.3% of complex life on the planet. Think what will we achieve, what we will achieve when. And it is a matter of when we understand 1 or 2%, let alone 5 or 10%. But how we design the emerging technologies behind these breakthroughs and what values inform their design will shape the future of humanity. And that is my point to you tonight, my friends, excellencies. At stake is whether we bequeath an Orwellian world designed for censorship and repression and control, or a world of emancipation, debate and learning, where technology threatens famine and disease, but not our freedoms. 7 decades ago, this General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights with no dissenting voices, uniting humanity for the first and perhaps the only time behind one set of principles. And our declaration, our joint declaration, upholds freedom of opinion and expression, the privacy of home and correspondence, and the right to seek and impart information and ideas. Unless we ensure that new technology reflects this spirit, I fear that our declaration will mean nothing and no longer hold. So the mission of the United Kingdom and all who share our values must be to ensure that emerging technologies are designed from the outset for freedom, openness and pluralism, with the right safeguards in place to protect our peoples. Month by month, vital decisions are being taken in academic committees, company boardrooms, and industry standards groups. They are writing the rule books of the future, making ethical judgments, choosing what will or will not be rendered possible. Together, we need to ensure that new advances reflect our values by design. There is excellent work being done in the EU, the Commonwealth, and of course, the UN, which has a vital role in ensuring that no country is excluded from the wonderful benefits of this technology and the industrial revolution it is bringing about. But we must be still more ambitious. We need to find the right balance between freedom and control, between innovation and regulation, between private enterprise and government oversight. We must insist that the ethical judgments inherent in the design of new technology are transparent to all. And we must make our voices heard more loudly in the standards bodies that write the rules. Above all, we need to agree a common set of global principles to shape the norms and standards that will guide the development of emerging technology. So, and here's the good news, I invite you next year to a summit in London, a wonderful city, where, by the way, it is not raining 94% of the time, and where at one stage when I was Mayor of London, or shortly before, we discovered that we had more Michelin-starred restaurants even than Paris. There the French somehow rapidly recovered by a process that I wasn't quite sure was entirely fair. But we still have, by far, in the UK, by far the biggest tech sector, by far the biggest tech sector, fintech, biotech, edtech, minitech, medtech, nanotech, green tech, every kind of tech in London, the biggest tech sector anywhere in Europe, perhaps 500,000 people working in tech alone. And I hope that you will come there, and we will seek to assemble the broadest possible coalition to take forward this vital task, building on all that the UK contribute to this mission as a global leader in ethical and responsible technology. If we master this challenge, and I have no doubt that we can, then we will not only safeguard our ideals, we will surmount the limits that once constrained humanity and conquer the perils that once ended so many lives. Together, we will vanquish killer diseases, eliminate famine, protect the environment, and transform our cities. Success will depend, now as ever, on freedom, openness, and pluralism, the formula that not only emancipates the human spirit, but releases the boundless ingenuity and inventiveness of mankind, and which, above all, the United Kingdom will strive to preserve and advance. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your kind attention.
The Prime Minister of
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong. Now, you can give your body and your immune system a mega boost of disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. With so many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all-natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rents.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rents.com.
With dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high-fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food stores I love to eat. Yum!
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio's Superfood. I've taken Bio's Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
Hi, it's Catherine from the Power Hour. If you're one of the many millions of people who have difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, or having unrestful sleep throughout the night, REM sleep could be the solution you've been searching for. If you are like me and are afraid of the dangerous side effects from prescription sleep aids, REM sleep is an all-natural alternative that contains ingredients research has shown to help improve and enhance better sleep. REM sleep will get you the deep sleep you need to feel your best and will ensure you wake up feeling energized. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today.
Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? Thepowermall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com today.
Welcome back, Power Hour Nation. I'm your guest host from Canada, George Freund, trying to tell people we have an AI emergency, not a climate emergency. Mr. Johnson made some very interesting promises at the end, and how the UN Charter will safeguard all our rights. Our opinions will be respected. Our privacy will be respected. Bald-faced lies we live with in the here and now. If you wish to express an opinion that goes against the new liberal order of globalization, you are mocked and scoffed and physically assaulted in the streets just for even supporting President Trump and wearing the MAGA hat. Or here in Canada, while we have an election, there is a small party called the People's Party that probably is a populist party. And the bands of thugs prevent you from going to meetings. The media chastises the leader and any of the candidates with just a barrage of evil words because they respect your opinion. And then, of course, there's a big push on that we have to get all the guns and we have a timeline and we have to do it quickly by hook or by crook. We have to get those guns. So that doesn't make me feel very comfortable with the fact that we won't be getting into a complete computer-denominated AI police state, the likes of which we've never seen, where your every movement will be controlled by some sort of artificial intelligence. And unless you soothe that beast in the appropriate manner, you'll become like Orwell's non-person. You won't be able to buy. You won't be able to sell. I think I read that in the Bible somewhere. And you won't be able to move or form thoughts. And he made a very specific point about vaccines. And this is happening here in Canada, too, in my province, Ontario, where they want to make it mandatory to have vaccines. But, of course, he also told you about the beast, the nanobots. How do you think they'd get those into unsuspecting or unwary bodies? Probably with that sort of needle. And those little armies could swim through your bloodstream like great fleets on the ocean and wage an eternal battle for your soul from the inside that you have no control over. And I believe they would go so far. It was one of the classic old Star Trek episodes where they had the instrument of obedience. Where when you have one of those thoughts that kind of rocks the boat, or you challenge the orthodoxy in any way, if you dare say the word he or she, that someone's going to turn up the power and give you a good jolt. And if you don't correct your behavior, then maybe at one point that will be a lethal jolt. He also mentioned the boardrooms, which is something I added to Mr. Churchill's speech when I talk about it. There's two places we don't fight. The boardrooms, and he said they were making decisions that are to control the destiny of the human race and the planet. I don't recall anyone asking us for our input, or that we could vote on any of these issues, or even know what they are. It's all done in secrecy. Another place that we don't fight is the schoolroom, that we give our children to these forces to be basically programmed like robots or brainwashed into things that may have no value or substance at all because they're just totally illusory and made up, but satisfy some crackpot somewhere. And that's the nature of the beast as it exists. So part of that may be, you know, the gender issues that are coming up, and that's important because robots don't have gender. So if we're going to turn the surviving bits and pieces of the human race into some sort of cyborg, gender is superfluous because it just won't matter anymore. And that's why this just came out of nowhere like a bad wind. And it has to be dealt with firm resolution that you know what's right and you know what's wrong and you never surrender. There were two other, maybe not as famous, American generals in war. One was General Wainwright. He surrendered to the Japanese in the Philippines at Corregidor. And I think if you even have the slightest knowledge of what happened to the POWs that surrendered, you'd realize, and probably to a man of them, they'd say, we wish we never surrendered, that we fought to the last man, because there's nothing in any sort of death in combat that could even compare with the death of this slow imprisonment at the hands of an evil empire, as the Japanese Empire was back then. I've known people who were in that custody. It is difficult to even describe to people who are just living in a normal world somehow of what that meant. When you surrender to the AI now, this will be a permanent surrender. Or you can look at another general who fought at the Battle of the Bulge. He was a general holding the line, so to speak, until reinforcements came. He was at Bastogne, General McAuliffe. And when the Germans came to him and said, you will surrender, he had a one-word answer for them, and it's even something you can say on the radio. Nuts. So the Germans at first didn't understand what he meant, because, of course, that's done in slang. But they realized pretty quick that that was a rather precise no way in hell. And they called them the battling bastards of Bastogne because they didn't give up. And then they were relieved in time by General Patton and his army as the counterattack pushed them back. That's the type of guts you're going to have to deal with this choice. Permanent enslavement forever, being some sort of sheeple cattle that's prodded and poked, controlled, just like any beast on a farm or in a zoo, or to be sovereign, sentient people the way God made you. Those are your choices. That is the emergency, and it has nothing to do with climate. That's a red herring. And then some. And if we have time, we'll play with that red herring. Yesterday's show talked about these burgers that they make, you know, and Boris Johnson probably talked about these types of foods and other things that they can manufacture. And the only thing that could come into my mind was a classic old film by Charlton Heston, and almost any of the old films by Charlton Heston are training films for the future, training films in faith, training films in decency and standing up for what's right. So you pretty much can't go wrong. But his classic, way back when I was a young man, was called Soylent Green. And this new burger they're making sounds to me like Soylent Yellow, like a computer-manufactured sustenance chip that tastes better, I guess, than the Soylent Yellow. But they were thinking about these things so long ago. Someone had to know. The other thing that, you know, I found shocking to a degree, too, was about the oxygen levels, that they've deteriorated to some points in cities to 6%. And I feel in my heart that what this is doing, this whole process, is exterminating life, pretty much all life in time, but with a special concentration on mankind, because we're created in God's image. And evil cannot for a minute stand looking at this great creation that our bodies are and has to eliminate it. It's like a death of 1,000 slices. So the chopping of all these trees and destroying the forests is basically to cut the oxygen content. And how low do we have to go before we go? And it's just a slow motion genocide, the death of 1,000 slices with every little advance that they make. A long time ago, when I realized about these things and thought about them, I was studying other history, the history of Easter Island and how they cut down all the trees. And it didn't take too long after that everybody died. And they just left these monolithic statues on the island for people to see later, but the trees were the lifeblood. And once they were gone, there was no agriculture. People slowly died. They fought over the last resources, and that was the end of it. You see this today in a modern microcosm. If you look at an aerial or satellite image of the island of Hispaniola, that's half Haiti, half the Dominican Republic, you can see the border from the fact that Haiti has no trees. They were all chopped down. The Dominican starts with the forests for however long they're going to last. So I called this concept of what we do by destroying the forests is Easter Island Syndrome, where we purposely cut off our life-giving oxygen and basically doom ourselves for whatever short-term gain we think we get. There's nothing better to me than to get into the forest with my dog. And you get into a deep part where it's just trees and you. And you breathe in this fresh oxygen that's made by the trees. Pray to God and thank Him for this wonderful Eden that we have. And pray again that we will not be seduced, tricked, maligned, or forced to surrender to what I term the tree of knowledge, the silicon tree. That's what it really is. When you take the bite out of the apple from that tree, that was more like prophecy, that apple is the computer and the bite is B-Y-T-E. And no one could really understand that so much in ancient times, so they transcribed it probably not as accurately as they should have, so that we would understand the battle and the choice that we have to make. We take the tree of life, or we take the tree of silicon. It's our choice, our free will choice. We have to decide. And based on that choice, we will live an ever ending slavery and agony, or we will be free, sovereign, independent. It's just marvelous. And then what do we do if he talks about these pink-eyed Terminators or some other AI robotic creature? You see that very, very clearly, how afraid they are of our freedoms and our opinions, because they want it globally, and especially here now in Canada, because we're up against the wall, and I hear from yesterday's news you're up against the wall too, where they want to buy back your semi-automatic firearms, because for some strange reason now, you are a threat, and they are evil. And it just boggles my mind now that Boris is lying about some kind of respecting of human rights and a charter of freedoms, because if they really meant that, they wouldn't come after our guns or us. They may even give us some, because we'd be in a benign state. Really wouldn't matter who had arms, as far as being decent people are concerned. But the fact that they're going after the decent people, especially here in Canada, the least crime-committing group of any group is the sports shooters in Canada. They're significantly safer than the police and the military, and of course any other group. And they are being whole hog attacked and vilified by the media, by politicians, putting out all sorts of evil rhetoric about them. And a lot of them are in just abject shock because they don't understand any of the details like you understand them here at Power Hour Nation. As they came up with a terminology called GUS, gutless, useless, senseless for most people, because they are. They have absolutely no courage. They do nothing to resist the movements to enslave us. And they have absolutely no sense because they believe whatever the mandarins on the box tell them. And here, it's a different thing. You have sense, good sense. You have great use because you apply what you know for the benefit of all, to share information on health, the knowledge of the stealth coming after us. And you have courage, courage to stand up against the storm. Even if it sweeps many aside, you'll still stand there and preach what you know to be the truth, just like one who is supposed to have done so before us, before he was crucified. That is very, very important, and you have to be strong. Dr. Charles Stanley had a great message on In Touch Ministries. I listen to that when I go to work in the morning. And it was about fear. He had two sermons back to back as all this gun control was coming out. And I really appreciated that, that we have to have this strength to overwhelm that. And two of the greatest Christian people talked about in Bible stories are Joshua, of course, taking on Jericho, but also that city of Ai, which rings a bell to me now, and how thoroughly that had to be destroyed. It doesn't get talked about as much. It's harder to find documentaries about that city, that battle, that war. There's very little information, probably for a reason, is they don't want you to know maybe how deep the rabbit hole went there. And the other one was Gideon. Strong, resourceful, never surrender, always have faith, be in tune with God, and stand your ground. They can't defeat that. That's why they've removed any talk of Christianity from the public school system, from the public places. They don't want the children to have even the slightest idea of that. Maybe some of you older ones will remember the comedian George Carlin, who's rather crass, but he had a thing you can watch on YouTube if you wish, as we won't repeat those words here, the seven words you can't say on television, and they were all dirty words. And people, ha, 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 funny, funny, funny. But nowadays, it wouldn't surprise me if you say all those words on television and nothing's going to happen. But they have a new seven words you can't say on television, by and large, or at least if you do say them, you'll be attacked, ridiculed, and put down. God, Jesus, Constitution, Founding Fathers, immigration, abortion, gun control. You start getting into some of those topics, and you find out very, very quickly that we don't have freedom of opinion at all. And that's a terrible shame. Something I'd like to do, too, if there's any Canadian listeners out there who are firearms owners, if they want to call in for the last segment, to do so, because we'd like to hear your feelings of being changed into public enemy number one and what it's like in your community. And, of course, if you don't know it, the number for that is 844-769-2944, 844-769-2944, and let us know how you're feeling, because, you know, by and large, through the sports shooting community, it would just hit like a tidal wave. And I tell people who are liberal and such like that, because I work in a very popular liberal riding, and, you know, everybody sucked into the propaganda and what Fearless Leader says, for whatever mind control reason is there. But one man that I know is very intelligent and knows a lot about history, and especially some of the bad history. But I say, I look at this as like lynching. You have an orchestrated events, a chaos created, a drug war in the streets, and you want to go after legitimate, honest sports shooters and take away their rights, turn them into criminals, seize their property, suspend their licenses, put them in prison, and if they resist, execute them with extreme prejudice. And somehow this is an inclusive, all-loving society that we're in. Wrong. It also reminds me of the time that we incarcerated all the Japanese citizens in both our countries. We both did it. Who were loyal Canadians and Americans. We had nothing to do with the Japanese Empire, but we needed some bad guys. So we picked them and stole all their property and locked them up for a good few years, which was probably a lot better than what the Japanese did to non-combatants on their side of the waters, but that's what happened. And I look at this as the same type of process, that they're going to do this to honest people, decent people, hardworking people, loyal people, maybe even a lot of Christian people, just because they can or think they can. And then maybe two generations, four generations later, another prime minister will come along and he'll apologize and say, we were wrong to do that, if the robots let him. Why would we do it now, knowing full well what we've done before? The history of government, like in a letter I'll try to read probably in the last segment that I wrote to the editor of the Globe and Mail about why should anyone in Canada have a handgun, is the government used to burn barns. The RCMP burned barns, and because they got caught burning barns, we created our own CIA, CSIS. It's an internal CIA more than an external one. If you did that, you wouldn't get a gun license. And then some of our soldiers were roasting Somalis over a 50-gallon drum with a fire in it. I think if you even hinted in that general direction, you probably wouldn't get a gun license. And then they talk about the residential schools in the paper the other day, and 4,000 kids were killed in these schools run by the government. 2,400 indigenous people and others. Well, I think if you had a track record running a child care center that killed thousands of children, well, one, you probably wouldn't be doing that anymore because you'd be behind bars, but you definitely wouldn't be getting a gun license. So this government wants all the guns with track records like that. And that's just a little bit of the icing off the top of the cake. We also ran those CIA experiments at McGill for MK Ultra. Torturing people with electricity, drugs, putting them in comas to try to see how we could control the human mind. Somehow I think if you ran a lab like that, you wouldn't get a gun license either. But the government doesn't need a license. They just take by force their authority. So just for those reasons alone, sometimes I scratch my head and go, why would citizens need handguns? I like being electroshocked. I like being roasted over a 50-gallon drum. Makes you think where our rights come from and why those are there, which we'll delve into a little bit on the other side, because it was the 1689 British Bill of Rights that gave you the right to bear arms after something called the Inquisition. So after experiencing that, there was no doubt why you needed the right to bear arms. And that's why people came to North America for religious freedom, to get away from that. The beautiful thing about the founding fathers, they wrote it down and put it in the Constitution, which you'd probably have to go through a vicious war to even come close to the point in time today where that would be included in any UN charter or any constitution anywhere in the world, unless it was from maybe a breakaway province or state in the world that we know. But they sure wouldn't do it now, because to them that's the most dangerous thing in the world, and we're supposed to be governments of, by, and for the people? I hardly think so. And if we have to fight artificial intelligence, a handgun's probably the last thing in the world you're going to need anyway. I think I'd be starting at something like a 338 Lapua Magnum and maybe something like the Terminator might be damaged slowly for a while unless it regenerates itself. But you're sure not going to do much with a pistol. And maybe just as an aside, for people who are into guns south of the border, and maybe those will still be allowed here north of the border, nothing like a 375 H&H Magnum or the Weatherby Magnums for taking on your robots if you've got a robot problem. But the most important thing in any battle is not firearms, small arms. They're small potatoes. What wins wars today and will win wars forever at this point in time are armor and air power. And even a well-regulated militia can do that now with construction equipment and drones. And you don't even get close enough to ever squeeze the trigger because you won't see your enemy unless it's from some computer simulation by satellite. So those are far more effective than anything you can hold in your hand. And something to think about if we're ever faced with some sort of AI takeover. And Elon Musk warns us about that. He gave out warning signs about the bots taking over, and that we'll know when they take over social media. And then hopefully we're not doomed. Hopefully this is our finest hour all around the world. I'm George Freund, your guest host from Canada, in the belly of the beast. We'll see you on the other side of the news. Thanks for coming to Power Hour Nation.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Foods, Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? Thepowermall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com today.
Dr. Joe Schneller.
The efficacy that we're looking for, that we're going to prove, is that Carnivora wakes up this immune system and makes it dominant.
I highly recommend that you get started right away using Carnivora because it really will help you. Just follow the directions as the company gives them to you. And I just want everybody to know that there's been no one paid to do this. I'm doing this on my own because I care about everybody and want to see healthy people.
My husband has recovered tremendously after the physician suggested that he start taking Carnivora. When he was doing so well, I decided to start taking it as well, and we're both so pleased to be able to feel healthy again.
Hello, folks. Richard Ostro of Carnivora Research International here. Visit carnivora.com or call 1-866-VENUS-FLY. That's carnivora.com or 1-866-VENUS-FLY. Call us.